I call this meeting of the. I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:35 p.m. on Thursday, April 2nd, 2026. Present today, we have Representative Hannon, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, myself, Co-Chair Shiragi, and we have others trickling into the room. So if you'll give them just a moment. As we start, if members could please remember to mute your cell phones. I also want to thank our LIO moderator and our nonpartisan staff that help us with our behind-the-scenes work here in our committee. Today, we will hear a presentation from the University of Alaska regarding capital projects and deferred maintenance. Our presenters today are President Pat Pitney. Thank you for flying down for this. We appreciate having you here, as well as Director of Government Relations, Chad Hutchinson. We also have online directors from each of our campuses available for questions, including UAA Director Chris McConnell, UAF Director Cam Holford, UAS Director Nathan Lay. Hopefully I've pronounced those names correctly. Apologies if not. And we've been joined by Co-Chair Foster and Representative Jimmy. Thank you both for being here today. Before we begin, just for housekeeping here, it is 1:36 right now. We have another, we have our bill from our earlier meeting that I think we're hoping to take back up after our presentation today and run through those amendments. I'd like to have Co-Chair Foster, do you think 30 minutes is appropriate for that?
For this presentation or the next?
For the taking the bill back up and running through amendments.
I would say however much time you need it here, we'll make it work later. So.
Great. Well, I know the bill sponsor has a committee starting at, I want to say, 3:15. So if we were wrapped up by 2:45, it gives us a little over an hour for this presentation. And if we need to push past that, we can, but let's have that be our target if we could. And we've been joined by Representative Stapp. All right. With that, thank you again to both of you for being here. If you want to begin your presentation, which we have pulled up now.
Great. Thank you, Chair Shiragi. For the record, Pat Pitney, University of Alaska President. And just start with a few opening comments and then move into the presentation. First, thanks to this body for ongoing and consistent support of the university's priorities writ large, but specifically for your ongoing attention to deferred maintenance. I know it's not lost on this committee, the importance of deferred maintenance, and deferred maintenance has been our top priority for as long as I've been involved in this part of the university, which started in about 95. So we've been focused a long time on that, but I know this body knows the importance of deferred maintenance.
And let me just pause you for one moment, President Pitney. We've been joined by Co-Chair Josephson, Representative Bynum online. And since the very beginning of the meeting, we've had Representative Moore with us. My apologies for not stating so earlier. Please continue.
All right. Thank you. So the most of our highest priority, of course, has been consistently our deferred maintenance, but we do have some additional requests, so we'll go over those. But in terms of our overall number of buildings, we have 400. That is down over the last 10 years as we've been reducing our footprint over time. The average age is now over 37 years, leaving many of our buildings in the 50 and 60 year old facilities. And at that point, there is, you know, extraordinary replacement needs. As you know, University of Alaska is Alaska's public higher education system. So we cover from community and technical college level all the way through our research enterprise. And we are in more than 15 communities throughout the state. And we feel very responsible and committed to each and every one of those communities throughout the state. In terms of our profile, our buildings are academic, research, service, housing, classrooms, and very complex labs. We have 8.3 million square feet. University of Alaska facilities among state entities is 40%. Is 40% of all state facilities. That doesn't count K-12. K-12 has probably a very similar footprint. And our backlog is now near $1.5 billion. We spend between $26 and $40 million annually through our operating budget or through grants to maintain as much as we can our facilities in proactive maintenance, lab renewals. A perfect example is we received a federal grant to redo a building in Bethel, and now it is a class a health care facility that is serving that community, and that particular facility had tremendous deferred maintenance. Now it is a very usable facility. So we're putting many of the dollars that we can attract and that we can afford out of our operating budget into these. But the need, if we were to stay equal to our depreciation, would be over $100 million annually that we would need to be putting into our facilities. And so the $60 million that we consistently request is just keeps us so we don't, so our depreciation isn't reducing our balance sheet. You know, and over the last 3 years, we've only received $11.8 million. There was one period of time in my career that the university's deferred maintenance backlog did not grow, and that was the 5 years under Governor Parnell when the university received $35 million annually. We were able to stop the growth in deferred maintenance. We didn't get it down, but we were able to stop the growth. And so, you know, it really is that consistency of deferred maintenance that's very important. Moving on, again, so $60 million is our top priority in deferred maintenance. At the end of this, well, when I stop talking, I'm going to turn it over to Director Hutchison to work with our facilities leads to talk about individual deferred maintenance projects, but as a whole, $60 million is our top priority. We have additional projects that we've requested in our capital budget, and they're very, very small and modest. The first two, the UA Leaders Archive, the UAA Alaska Leaders Archives, and the UAS Sitka Campus Doc Facility. Those two requests were in our budget request last year, and both of them were funded at 50%. This is the other 50%. So this is finishing the funding that we had requested last year that were half funded. This targeted classroom upgrades is really to facilitate more learning in each of the community campuses sites, and so it's upgrading that equipment in those in those community campuses. So that's Ketchik, Kenai Peninsula, Matsu, Prince William Sound, Kodiak. The next one is a. In our attempt to continue to reduce our footprint and to demolish facilities that where the replacement value is just too far past what we could do, we're asking for some funding to demolish buildings and move the remaining functions in those old buildings into other buildings. And so Cam Wolforth, UAF, could talk more about that if there's interest. And then the last is a request that comes from both the university and Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. So we have a joint use facility, the rec facility out here at the campus at University of Alaska Southeast Juneau. was a unique partnership between DMVA and the university. They have a guard facility and we have a rec facility and we share that facility. You'll see on their request, they also have $2 million in their request for this roof replacement. And this is our share of the roof replacement. So the next.
And we have a question from Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair Shragi. Good to see you, President Pitney. I'm just wondering on the UA Alaska Leaders Archives Consortium Library renovation, is that the Ted Stevens Library project?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions at this point? Not seeing any. Please continue.
Okay. We have a request for match and receipt authority. And largely these are grant-funded facilities. The UAA Alaska Native Gathering Space. So we require from the legislature permission to expend funds. So even though we are able to raise the funds for these facilities, we need the receipt authority in our budget for us to continue with the project or to complete the project. So these are on the receipt authority side. So the Native Gathering Space, the Transit Fleet Facility, where there is a awarded federal grant, $5.4 million. And then here in Southeast, one of their top fundraising priorities is the Cyril George Indigenous Knowledge Center. So again, receipt authority, not general fund, but we need it in the budget for us to accept and complete these projects. We put in our budget request additional facilities. In the event there was a geo bond or a war in the Middle East. And so top on that list is our University of Alaska student housing. And we worked on a process and concepts for both UAA and UAF in terms of new housing. UAS is focused on maintaining their existing housing. And why we're looking at new housing at UAF and UAA is because they have waiting lists and our highest priority is recruitment and retention of students. The board has made that foremost clear. Everybody across our universities is focused on our student recruitment, retention, and speed to graduation. Housing is critical to that speed to both attracting students and the speed to graduation. With roughly a 60-40 split, 60% state, 40% university financed bonds, we can build two significant housing projects, one at UAA and one at UAF. It's that 60% from the state that is critical because how we fund the debt service on a housing project is through the student housing fees. And we are unable to charge student housing fees at a level that we could actually build. So that's where the 60% state support comes in. UAF is focused on graduate student housing and family housing. That's where they have the most acute need and the highest student demand. Anchorage is focused on, you know, a traditional residential dorm. And then again, Southeast on the maintenance. In addition, there's a request for a childcare facility at University of Alaska Anchorage. And then our longstanding fire station replacement at UAF. Right now, we have a unique relationship with the community of Fairbanks where they pay the university to offer fire protection in and near the campus. But the fire station that exists, Rep. Shragi is very, very familiar with this, is well beyond its lifespan, not quite big enough for some of the trucks that now exist. And our academic programs in fire, public safety, emergency medic, EMTs has really grown substantially in the last 10 years. So in addition to the fire station, this also would fund adjacent classrooms for those academic programs. So those are the facilities that would anticipated either bond or additional revenue. So, and this is what I had just said, $60 million from the state plus $40 million from the university, we are able to accomplish two major projects. There is detail for each of the universities, but I really want us to focus on our top priority of deferred maintenance, but we did leave details on the housing projects if people want to follow up at a later date. And with that, I am going to turn it over to Director Hutchison to moderate with the universities the detail about our deferred maintenance request. So with that, thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for committee members while we still have President Pitney at the table?
Yes.
Galvin.
Thank you. I just want to, before the president leaves this space, I want to again acknowledge my gratitude for all that you've done for so many in this state. You've truly, I think, set a tone for how to be transparent, how to bring together people to rebuild this university in ways that many thought wouldn't be possible, but it's coming back in such a way that we have a plus in how many students want to join in. I know that our attendance rates are up, up, up. You've worked with us. You've always been present and accessible and answered every question. And more importantly, I think you've modeled what we all hope to be, which is a leader who is looking positively about the future of Alaska and growing it for us. So I want to thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, thank you so much. And thanks for, again, the support of all of you in bringing this institution to its potential. We don't have the fall statistics yet, but the applications and admits are double digits up, so we'll see how much that turns into enrollment. But our summer enrollment is up over 10% across the board. Now, summer enrollment's relatively small, so it's not a huge indicator, but it's just an indicator of the continued momentum. So really, really am excited about the momentum that exists and the high-quality programs we have for students across the state. So thank you.
Yeah, President Pitney, could not agree with Representative Galvin more in terms of my appreciation for the work that you've done for our university system. It's greatly appreciated, and we'll be sad when you end up ultimately getting to that retirement date and enjoying that time with grandbabies and everything else you choose to do in your retirement. But thank you. I've got Representative Jimmy and then Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you, Co-Chair Shockey. Thank you so much for your work. I've been to the KUC where they showed us that new upgraded room, and it's opening the doors for so many people to stay close to the villages, live in Bethel, and even to take nursing classes. It's so nice what you did out there. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Foster.
I just really wanted to underscore what Representative Galvin was saying. I've known you, Pat, since going back before you at the university when you were the OMB director. Yeah. I've known you for over 10 years now, and it's always just been your leadership will be missed. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. I did have one question just on some of the residential dorm requests for Anchorage. I know that the municipality of Anchorage has ambitious housing goal. Are there any kind of unique opportunities right now for collaboration or partnership with the municipality to further some of these projects, or am I off the mark there?
For the record, my name is Chad Hutchison, State Director for Government Relations for the University of Alaska, and Representative Shragi, perhaps the person best suited to talk about some of the affairs of UAA. We have Christopher McConnell online that would be the lead in any sort of arrangement as far as that goes.
Let's see here. And I'm sorry, his name again?
Christopher McConnell.
Christopher McConnell, are you online and able to address that question? Looks like he is.
Good afternoon, and thank you. For the record, Christopher McConnell, Associate Vice Chancellor of Facilities and Campus Services. So I would like to actually ask if I could take that question and circle back with information. I do know that my boss, Vice Chancellor Brian Buchholz, has actually been having some conversations with the municipality on what kind of partnerships do in fact exist and what kind of things we could be doing from a collaborative perspective. However, I personally have not had a direct seat in the ring for those conversations, and so I would like the opportunity to phone a friend and circle back if that is appropriate.
That sounds wonderful, Director McConnell. Thank you. That'll be great. Mr. Hutchison, please proceed as planned.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Shragi. For the record, again, Chad Hutchison, State Director of Government Relations for the University. What we have here, this is slide 15. This is our deferred maintenance request. What we're going to be going through for the remainder of the presentation is the priority list that you see on listed page 32 of the FY27 Red Book. So we have everything on one page. For ease of reference, you can see the who, what, when, where, and why, the cost associated with each of the project, and then what priority it is as it relates to the entire system as we go through it. So to begin with, we will begin with our first deferred maintenance priorities for UAA, UAF, and UAS. And the first one, top priority overall for the entire system, is UAA, the Cuddy Hall renewal. And with that, if we could have Christopher McConnell again speak on some of the items and keep it brief, and then we can able to move through some of the points as we go forward with the PowerPoint presentation.
I think we're making pretty good time so far. We've got about 48 minutes remaining before our targeted stop. Before we go to Director McConnell, Representative Hannon.
Thank you. And I just wanted to ask that through Chair Shragi that as they describe those, so it's not clear to me what Cuddy Hall's, what the building is used for, right? So just to tell us what kind of building it is as they're going over that.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. All right. With that, Director McConnell, would you like to take slide 17 on the Cuddy Hall renewal?
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. Again, for the record, Chris McConnell, Associate Vice Chancellor of Facilities and Campus Services. So to start with, Lucy Cuddy Hall is the home of our culinary arts program and our hospitality programs. So if you've been there for dining services or bakery services, also if you are here in Anchorage for Christmas, Kelly Puff, our head chef there, also helps with doing the gingerbread at the downtown at the hotel, the Captain Cook. So that's the primary focus of this facility. It was constructed in the 70s, and any of these projects that we talk about, to kind of be to the point, is these are the back of the stuff behind the scenes, the stuff that you want working and that you don't want to really be aware of, right? And if you're aware of it, it's because there's a challenge or difficulty. So this facility specifically rose up because my mechanical folks are having difficulties with the air handler systems, we're having pipe failures. We had to turn away donated equipment, right? So there was a partnership opportunity where we could get some new kitchen equipment. But when we went through and did our due diligence for compliance, it quickly came to the fore that our gas lines aren't sized correctly for new modern kitchen equipment. Our ventilation system and things like hoods aren't adequate to support the newer requirements for equipment coming into our places and spaces. And then on top of that, you know, we, like you'll hear from a lot of my peers, the reactive responses continue to go up. So some of these pictures highlight things that happened recently, valve failure that resulted in a flood. We have boiler leaks that we have to respond to. Currently, I have an underground drain line that has failed that has put a temporary closure on Cafe Delta. So one a coffee service area. I guess I apologize. Another function of this facility is it also is a community gathering space. We host a number of events in this space and place as well. And for now, that cafe is out of operation until things can thaw and get in there and really assess and come up with a strategy for repair on that facility. And so those are the kinds of things we're targeting with these types of requests. We want to be able to care for our existing assets and then subsequently set ourselves up for future success as we continue to seek industry partnerships and collaborations.
Thank you, Director McConnell. And I believe you helped lead a site visit / maintenance tour that I attended in years past. And just want to thank you for that. I'm not seeing any questions right now. So let's go to the next slide, Director Hutchinson.
So for the record, Chad Hutchinson, State Director for the University. The next slide is from UA Fairbanks. This is the critical roof replacement for the UA Museum. Chair Shragi, you had the opportunity to also see that with your staff when you were up in Fairbanks. And with that, if we could have Director Kim Wolford give an explanation, that would be perfect.
Director Holford.
Good afternoon. For the record, Cameron Wolford, UAF Division of Design and Construction Director. The University of Alaska Museum of the North is a cornerstone of Alaska's tourism. It's a leader in K-12 outreach, and it's nationally recognized institution housing over 2.5 million irreplaceable cultural and scientific artifacts. And it's really central to Alaska's identity and our education research mission here at UAF. And today that building is at risk. In 2022, we discovered a failed roof membrane over what we lovingly call Big Orca. That's kind of on the newer section, even though it's 24 years old now this year. And it's exposed both exhibits and protected collections to ongoing water intrusion. We investigated it and it showed it the underlying roof structure. So the plywood and the things you see in the picture there are completely deteriorated and there's active water pooling beneath the membrane. And in the last couple of years, we've had some pretty big freestyle and ice events that damage has worsened, which has required repeated emergency repairs just to prevent impacts to the interior of the museum. So this is a critical failure. And, you know, like I said, we've patched it. We've done the best we can year over year, but it's time to replace it. And we need to do an immediate roof replacement so that we can avoid a catastrophic damage to the collections that are underneath this roof. Immediate funding is really essential to help us protect this irreplaceable facility and the collections it was built to preserve, and supporting university research and teaching and Alaska's amazing tourism economy.
Okay, thank you. Director Hutchinson.
Thank you. Moving on, the first priority for UA Southeast, it's on our Ketchikan campus, and we have Director Nathan Lay that can explain further.
Okay, Director Lay.
Yes, this is Nathan Lay, UAS Facilities Director here in Juneau. This project is in the Ziegler Building, which is one of three buildings on the Ketchikan campus. This project will replace the air handling unit. It's been rebuilt several times, and as you can see from the photo, we've had multiple failures of the motor that goes in there, and so another thing that's going to be replaced is the communication system, the building automation system. The current system is no longer serviced by the vendor, and so we need to upgrade to the newer version. So this building houses administrative offices, classrooms, and the library. And so if it goes down, then it severely impacts our Ketchikan campus.
Very good. Director Hutchinson, you want to lead us along here?
Yes.
And thank you.
Thank you, Chair Shragi. So this is the second deferred maintenance priorities for all three universities. We'll start with University of Anchorage with Vice Chancellor McConnell, the UAA campus IT renewal. Director McConnell.
Please proceed, Director McConnell.
Excellent. Thank you. For the record, Chris McConnell, ABC of Facilities and Campus Services for UAA. This project kind of reads like the title. It is a it's a campus-wide focus on deferred maintenance of IT infrastructure, especially with all the pressures with respect to digital learning, campus connectivity, campus security. Right now, IT is running a backlog actually of over 4 million. So we did kind of work collaboratively with them to kind of said, all right, well, if we get this allocation, where would we start, right? And so they've targeted a number of facilities which are in our Red Book submission, but the admin building, the admin humanities building, the professional studies building, Homer College of Health, the library, which we talked about, with the home, future home of the Alaska Leaders Archive, and also our learning commons and other student-facing services. Social science building will be critical on the list as well. That's the home to our data center. So we'll be looking at what needs to be repaired, switches, things like that, upgraded. And of an interesting thing that I learned through all this process is that data center actually supports all our community campuses as well. So investment and resiliency there would be important to continue to prioritize. Otherwise, that kind of sums up this targeted investment here.
And Director McConnell, did I hear you say that the overall IT backlog is 4 million, but this is an incremental approach of $1 million now?
Correct. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other questions? Not seeing any. Director Hutchinson?
So with that, we'll...
I assume you want to go to Director Holford next.
That's correct, yes. So Director Wolford, we're on UA Fairbanks, critical roof replacement for the Cutler Housing Complex. Again, Chair Shragi, this is what you visited with your staff with your visit up in Fairbanks.
Very good. Director Holford.
Again, Cameron Wolford, Director of Design and Construction here at UAF. The Cutler Apartment is our largest, most requested, most heavily used student housing apartment style. For undergrads, we can hold up to 231 students there in Cutler. The roof is years beyond its lifespan. And as you can see from the pictures and as witnessed in the tour, we have ongoing roof failures that are active. They've created mold. They've created mid-semester student displacement, which is just horrible for our students to have to be displaced from their room mid-semester. And this happens during the winter also, so it's not just a summer rain time thing experience. Entire apartment blocks are offline currently, even as our housing demand exceeds our capacity. And so this also ties into our housing project in terms of trying to get these units back online. Some recent inspections confirm the building roofs are beyond repair, total rot in the system, so we need to do replacement. And without that replacement, we'll lose this critical housing, and it's becoming more and more apartments have to be taken offline as the years go by. There's six blocks in Cutler. We've already redone three of those blocks from prior year funding. This request is to do the next largest block that has the most active leaks. This request also ties into some ADA compliance issues within the apartment complex, mostly deteriorated site infrastructure, retaining walls, and stairs and ramps that can no longer get a student who has requested an ADA unit from their parking spot or from a classroom into their room. And so we're having to make additional different accommodations for those students. And it's pretty treacherous in that area during the winter. So this funding would restore safe and accessible year-round housing, and it supports our student success and improving UAS enrollment growth.
Thank you, Director Holford. Director Hutchinson. Oh, I'm sorry. Question from Representative Tomaszewski. Don't go yet, Director Holford.
Thank you, okay. Co-Chair Shragi. So the Cutler roof failure, was this a end-of-life failure? Was it a engineering failure or a maintenance failure? And what are we doing to prevent the failures in the future?
Director Holford?
Through the chair, it's definitely an end-of-life life cycle replacement issue. The roof is probably about 15 years beyond the normal lifespan of this type of roof. It's called an IRMA roof. And if you know anything about IRMA roofs, they trap the moisture between the insulation and the membrane. And in Fairbanks conditions, freeze thaw is just horrible on those roofs. So it's definitely an end-of-life cycle replacement. We have a routine yearly inspection program on our preventative maintenance program that would catch the early stuff. But when it gets to the point where so many freeze thaw cycles have broken through the membrane, it's kind of hard to catch that on a maintenance inspection.
follow up?
Yeah, follow up.
And so, when you replace this roof, you're using the same system, and then what will be the life expectancy on the same roof system?
Director Holford?
Through the chair, we actually changed the roof system. We flipped the insulation down to the bottom, put the membrane on the top. It's got a EPDM roof membrane. If you ever have heard of those, it's a rubberized membrane we put on there. It's got a 30-year life. We go with a very thick, heavier rubber membrane over top of that. So we should get another 30 years out of this roof. And with good maintenance, even 10 years beyond that.
And what's the R value on that new roof?
Director Holford?
Through the chair, typically we go for R60. When we do retrofits, though, we're kind of limited by the height of some of the features on the roof, like the parapet, or if you can see in the top picture, there's some slanted roofs called clear stories. We're kind of limited, so we maxed out that R value with the best insulation on the market. We've typically been able to get an R40 to 45 in these retrofits on Cutler.
Great. Thank you.
Yes. Very good. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Chair Shoggy, can you tell me when did this complex go offline?
Director Holford.
Student Chair Representative Hannon, the first, Cutler 101, 102 went offline, I believe, 4 years ago. We patched it, used it for a semester, took it back offline, and I believe in the fall of 2024, we decided to leave those two specific ones offline. While we repair room 202 or Cutler apartment 202 is kind of just repairing that as we go because that's one of the more popular units. But that's gotten to the point where we're probably got to abandon that apartment complex also.
Follow up.
And I'm seeking a little clarity. So I think at the beginning you said there are six buildings in the complex. So how many of them are currently housing students and how many are not available for housing at the moment?
Director Holford.
Through the chair, all six blocks are housing students. Blocks one and two, which have the roof failures that you're seeing here, are operating about 45 to 50% capacity right now. So the rooms that have active leaks that we just cannot stop, we've taken those rooms out of that block. And the rest of them were kind of babying along with some maintenance and Gunpucky and ambition to keep those apartments operational for right now.
Okay.
And then additional follow-up?
One follow-up. Will the 4.160 repair all six buildings in the block, or is that only for a subset of them?
Director Holford.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, that is for a subset of them. That'll be block 100 and 200. Block 300, which would be the only one left of the smaller block that would be a future year capital request.
So just as a maybe a question for you, Director Holford. So just to reconfirm, there are six blocks. Three have already been repaired. Two of them would be covered by this request if approved and making it through the governor's office. And then that would leave one remaining to still be that you would still be seeking funds for in future years. Is that correct, Director Holford?
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Not seeing any additional.
Co-chair Shraggy.
Oh, Representative Bynum, yes. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. Quick question through the chair. The facilities we're talking about, we are talking about apartment buildings, correct?
Representative Bynum, that's correct. Student housing apartment buildings, that's correct.
Okay. And follow-up?
Yep, follow-up.
Yep, and the university owns these buildings? Or do they have some kind of liability against them other than
Representative Bynum? I believe that is correct, that the university owns these buildings. Looking for a nod from the director, and okay. I'm getting a nod, yes.
Okay, and then so that leads to my final question. Do we not charge enough for the room and board for these facilities to recover the cost of operational maintenance and capital recovery? And if so, why? I mean, if not, why not?
That is not a question that I can answer, Representative Bynum. Director Hutchinson, who would you like to address that?
I'd recommend Director Wolford first, and then I'll take a crack at it.
Very good. Director Holford, we going to give a first crack on this one?
Sure. Through Chair Representative Bynum, our RIP model that we charge the students by the semester, it's a combined RIP model with their dining fee also for the Cutler apartment. The portion of the rent model that goes towards operations and maintenance, it does also have a life cycle or reserve fund that we use to fund additional renovations in the building. So, for example, when we did the other block roofs, capital dollars were used for the roof component. Housing dollars were used to renovate the actual apartments themselves. The cost of construction in Fairbanks, as it continues to escalate, the rent component of that going into that reserve just doesn't have as much buying power as it did before. But we do portion off a chunk of that rent to cover capital needs until they get such a large size of capital project that we need to request additional capital funding.
Director Hutchinson, anything you'd like to add to that?
No.
Okay. Representative Bynum, a follow-up on that?
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Trage. Through the chair, I'm just trying to understand that we have these facilities where we're providing housing. We're providing them basically as a nonprofit, and so the only rent that we're charging to these facilities is for recovery of capital and maintenance. I'm just don't understand how we're not A, competitive in the housing component that's heavily subsidized because we're not making a profit off of these facilities. I just don't understand how we're not charging enough to be able to recover the capital cost.
Anything that you'd like to offer in response to that, Director Hutchinson?
Through the chair, Chad Hutchinson's State Director of Government Relations. There's cost sensitivity with the students, I think, too, that has to be considered as we kind of ponder the recuperation ability of the university with housing, and to make up the a $4.1 million capital request with the amount of students that we're talking about, which Director Wolford could probably tell you better about how many live in Cutler. I mean, that would take it would not be something that we could count on as recoverable within any sort of reasonable time frame. And I defer to Director Wolford if he has further comment on that, but I think that would be a major challenge with multi-million dollar projects.
Director Wolford.
Thank you for that. Co-Chair Shragi, I'll follow up offline with the university because I'll have similar questions as we go through capital for the university for many of the facilities that we'll be looking at. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Bynum. Director Hutchinson, keep us moving here.
So with that, we'll go to UA Southeast. And Director Lay, if you would like to talk about UAS Juno campus, the replacement of the saltwater intake pipes.
Yeah, so you'll see a picture of the Anderson building located here in Juneau. That's where our marine students study and work. We have a seawater system that pulls water in from Ock Bay. The two pipes there were buried at one time, but since we're in an area with glacial rebound, where the ground is going up and the erosion keeps going down, and so there's a large section that has eroded. It's still working right now. We haven't lost suction on these two lines, but at any point that one of these lines could rupture and it would shut down our seawater system. So this project will replace those input lines.
Okay, very good. Representative Tomaszewski, question on this one?
Yeah, what do they use the seawater system for exactly?
Director Lay?
So it's used for both students for their studies and also for research projects. If you come take a tour of it, there's several labs downstairs that they have tanks, and they run seawater through those tanks, and then they have we call them critters, but I'm sure there's more scientific name for them in each of those tanks.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Chair Shragi, could I get one clarification? It's a UAS campus building, but is the UAF marine program that's located here in Juneau also in that same facility using those same pipes?
Director Lay?
Not quite. So this one is at the Anderson Building, which is closer into town. The UAF one is out at Lena Point, which is a new facility that's another 10, 15 miles further out the road. So they're two separate facilities.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Not seeing any other questions. Director Hutchinson, you want to take us to our third level priorities here?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Shragi. Going to UA Anchorage, Vice Chancellor McConnell, if you can talk about UA exterior safe access and circulation improvements.
Director McConnell.
Excellent. Thank you. For the record, Chris McConnell, ABC, Facilities and Campus Services, UAA. So again, this is another one of those, I think the title kind of explains what we're up to a little bit here. So this is a roads, trails type project. I think our roads and trails throughout campus are kind of getting to the point where my ground screw has difficulty keeping up, like whether we're doing cold patches or hot patches, failure rate. Is starting to exceed our ability to keep these in safe, functional condition moving forward. And so we're at a point where we need to start doing some real scrapes and repaves to kind of get this back into safe operating condition. And this would be a campus-wide initiative. Again, we do have some sequencing and priorities, like over by the library, it's a pretty rough intersection, but West Campus tends to struggle as well as our residential campus. So we would be prioritizing our roads through that fashion, main common areas, and go from there.
Okay. Thank you. Not seeing any questions there. Director Hutchinson.
The next slide we have is UA Fairbanks. This is the UAF Irving 1. That is the Irving building, the elevator repair and code compliance. And Director Wolford.
Director Wolford.
Again, Cameron Wolford, UAF Design and Construction Director. So the Irving 1 building is the home of our veterinary medicine program. That's the program that we are in a 2+2 program with Colorado State to train and certify Alaskan students to become veterinarians, and it's been a very successful program. The building also houses the Tulip Lake Field Logistics, and if you know about Tulip Lake, it's UAF is a cooperative operator up there that supports the research all across everything north of the Brooks Range. So in a recent fire alarm project, we identified that the elevator, which is a 1965 elevator and serves all these programs, has never been modernized, and it doesn't have the right systems to be able to tie into the fire alarm. So right now it's not connected to the fire alarm system, which creates a serious life and safety risk during emergencies. We also found additional deficiencies within the operation and maintenance of this elevator, including the buttons on the front, which don't work most of the time. This project will fully modernize that elevator. It'll bring up the code. It'll improve the reliability, and it'll ensure safe operation for the building occupants. Upgrades will also include a new energy efficient motor, monitor controls, fire service integration, and safety improvements. The elevator is really essential for moving folks around and research materials around. While this elevator is down, we can't get materials from the loading dock up to other levels where there's active research going on. So it's a little bit of a pain to have to carry those things up and downstairs when they're needed upstairs. So with the action, we can reduce our risk of entrapment. We can reduce we can improve our emergency response during a fire, and we can improve our accessibility with modernization.
Very good, Director Hutchinson.
With that, we'll move on to UA Southeast. This is the UAS Ketchikan campus. Director Lay, if you'd like to comment.
Director Lay.
This is Nathan Lay, UAS Facility Services. Some of you may have seen this project before. This is going to be phase two. Our phase one project happened in FY22. And when we started working on the building, tore off the siding, we found out that there was some structural damage, as you can see in the photo below there. And so the project had to do some repairs to that structural damage, and we was only able to do half of it. So this project will do the second half. We're going to be replacing the cement board siding with a metal siding that will last a lot longer in Ketchikan's climate, and hopefully it'll last for another 40 years.
Okay. Thank you, Director Lay. Not seeing any questions there. Director Hutchinson.
Okay. With that, we'll go to the fourth deferred maintenance priorities, and we only have the top five total for all universities, so we'll work through these. This is UA Anchorage, the Social Sciences Building. Vice Chancellor McConnell, if you'd like to speak on that.
Director McConnell.
Yes, thank you. Chris McConnell, for the record, Chris McConnell, ABC, Facilities and Campus Services for the University of Alaska Anchorage. So there's two facilities rolled up into this presentation, on both, one being the Learning Hub, the other, the Student Union, being the Student Engagement Hub. So we talked a little bit about Social Sciences Building Early being the home of the data center, but what it's also home to is the College of Arts and Sciences, and our psychology program. Within that, actually next week, we're having a ribbon cutting for a new, an expansion of the Psychology Services Center with a focus on pediatric psychology. So that's really exciting development. But like we've kind of articulated, the building itself is tired. The stuff behind the walls is not working well. We still have pneumatic controls throughout these facilities, which are inefficient. Lighting controls that are beyond their useful life, which drives up operating costs, as well as just core mechanical and electrical infrastructure. So within SSB, we're looking at those types of modernizations. Coming over to the Student Union, that air handler system that's in there is beyond its useful life. And then we've had consistent failures in the underfloor, the piping under the slab there, that has resulted in compromises or rework that we've had to do to come up with innovative solutions to keep our food service operations. So when you start thinking about how we serve students, there's the commons, which is adjacent to the residential campus. Well, if you've been on campus at our Student Union, we have Subway and other types of food and entertainment venues, and that's the kind of core student hub there and the core food service venue. Well, when those drains are compromised, it impacts our ability to provide food service to the students. So fortunately, we've been, I've got a really talented group of plumbers in-house, and they've done some really good work to keep things going, but I think our ability to keep up will be strained over time. And so we're looking to try and tackle those types of issues with this investment here.
Okay, thank you, Director McConnell. I see a maybe question, but but it looks like we're going to pass up the opportunity here. Director Hutchinson.
Okay, with that, we'll go to the next slide. This is UA Fairbanks. This is modernizing the engineering labs and duckering. Director Wolford, if you'd like to speak on this.
Director Wolford.
Again, Cameron Wolford, UAF Division of Design Construction Director. So the Duckery Building is one of our core engineering, teaching, and research facilities. That's where we're hosting the critical minerals research out of presently. That was funded through some initiatives a couple of years ago. There's a critical life safety and functionality issue that came out during a recent fire alarm project that we completed. It revealed some widespread deficiencies in the fire dampers and fire-rated doors. We've done maintenance measures on these to keep the doors functional, keep the dampers functional, but the permanent corrections are what we need to urgently do. And that it keeps us, keeps our labs safe, keeps our classrooms safe, and keeps fire from spreading from room to room or hall to hall. And so like our maintenance guys have done a great job trying to get the dampers, at least the actuators replaced and keep them, in operation. But we need to get them replaced, the whole damper replaced, and restore some full life safety compliance to the building. Additionally, that one of the materials lab that supports the critical minerals and supports teaching is way undersized for the use that it's used for. It doesn't have proper ventilation, and it doesn't meet ADA standards. And so it kind of creates a safety risk, specifically with dust exposure and excessive noise. At the dust collector that they do use is more of an industrial dust collector, not meant for classrooms and in research spaces. So that project will reconfigure that lab a little bit and get some new ventilation going in there and repair things or replace deficient items that have been broken for a couple of years. And it'll also help separate incompatible activities. So keep the dusty stuff in one space and the cutting in a different space and the sitting in another space. So that'll ensure we have safe and accessible facilities for our students. And so this investment just sustains our engineering education, and it keeps our critical mineral research labs up and running. It resolves some fire code risk and preserves uninterrupted use of our facilities.
Okay, thank you. Director Hutchinson, keep us moving here.
Next slide is UA Southeast. Director Lay, this is the Sitka campus HVAC control replacement.
Director Lay.
Yes, Nathan Lay, UAS Facility Services. Our Sitka campus is housed in a World War II hangar, and this project will replace the building automation controls, which is currently a pneumatic system, and replace it with a digital system that gives us more control over how the building is operated mechanically wise, and it'll improve the efficiency of our building.
Is it normal to have water in the dial there?
No, it's not.
All right. Any other questions? Not seeing any. Please continue, Director Hutchinson.
Okay, with this is our last three. This is this is rounding out the top five priorities for each of the universities. UA Anchorage, this is the Creek Bridge Building Envelope Renewal. Vice Chancellor McConnell.
Director McConnell.
Excellent. Thank you. For the record, Chris McConnell, ABC, UA Facilities and Campus Services. So this is essentially a roof and window job. I think we've had this on the books for a few years, trying to advocate for this space. It's a critical connector, bridging East and West campus, literally. So if you've been on our campus, you can go from one side of campus to the other while staying inside. It's definitely a benefit to our students, campus community, and accessibility at large. Similar to what was described with prior roof projects, the roof up here is old. It's one of those IRMA inverted roof membrane system type system roofs that needs to be replaced. And we would be following through this project, we would actually be lockstep with our peer institution with the same type of roofing system going to the EPDM style roof system if this project moves forward. And then concurrently, we'd be addressing the windows, like I said, which are single pane windows. So this space, if you've had the pleasure to be there, when it's hot, the top, when it's cold, it's really cold, right? But it still doesn't marginalize its use because in addition to being a campus connectivity, you'll often see students hanging out in there, enjoying the sun, studying, or eating lunch throughout the day. So it kind of acts like an important gathering space for our campus community, as well as just providing that connectivity. And at least every year when it rains, you can come on by and I'm happy to give you a tour.
Very good. Director Hutchinson, move us back up to Fairbanks, would you?
Okay. The next slide, UA Fairbanks, enhanced student access and privacy. Director Wolford.
Director Holford.
Cameron Wolford, UAF Design Construction Director. The UAF Health and Counseling Center, that's our primary on-campus care facility. It supports student wellness, retention, and academic success. It serves the 1,400 students that live, take up residence on campus, as well as all the other students that attend class here and rely on health services on campus instead of having to travel across town to the nearest first care facility. If you're familiar with Fairbanks, we don't have a first care facility near the campus. It's over at the hospital or over on Airport Way. So it's substantially far away, especially if you live on campus and don't have transportation. So the current center was built in the early 70s. It was it's never been modernized, and it's got some significant limitations. During the recent pandemic, we identified, things like inadequate patient separation, poor accessibility, and we took care of those challenges. We received some grants, and we put together some maintenance dollars and some central operating dollars, and we took care of a first phase of this project to create some isolation, create a patient intake room, and some triage space. So that's been taken care of. So the second phase will address all the exam rooms, the mental health counseling rooms, and the restrooms that are part and parcel to the healthcare facility. We'll address ventilation, clinical finishes. We'll change the layout a little bit that will help out with privacy and noise control, and replace some other aging building systems in there. It'll also allow us to provide some additional space to meet our growing demand for mental health services. Student health, mental health, as you know, is one of our highest priorities, and our current demand exceeds the capacity of this facility. And so these improvements will help enhance the privacy of those patients, expand that care access, and reduce student attrition during medical and mental health crises.
So we see this as a great investment into student wellness first. It ensures safe and compliant care. And it also just improves accessibility and strengthens our student retention and connection.
Okay. Thank you, Director Holford. Director Hutchinson, keep us moving.
That will go to our last slide. UA Southeast, Director Lay, this is the Juneau campus replacing the Housing and Recreation Center trail. Lighting.
Director Lay, wrap us up here.
Nathan Lay, Facility Services Director. We have a trail that runs between housing and our rec center, and it goes through the woods. The lighting on it currently is an old style lighting that where the poles are tall and they're several hundred feet apart. New lighting design standards for pedestrians specify a shorter light and spaced more frequently. So as you can see on the bottom, the walking down that pathway is a lot more convenient, a lot more safe for pedestrians walking in the Juneau's dark winter months. This project will replace the lighting going from housing to the rec center with a similar system that's shown on the rest of campus.
Okay. Thank you, Director Lay. Director Hutchinson, that takes us to our questions slide. I know that Representative Hannon, I think, has a question. Just curious, were you wanting to touch on the two slides that are here in the appendix?
Sure, Shragi, I can if you'd like. It's just an overview of our deferred maintenance increases, the cost of the backlog throughout history, but I can also give time back to the committee if you'd like that too.
Okay, and so the large takeaway here is that the deferred maintenance backlog is continuing to grow, suggesting that capital appropriations over the last, looks like two decades here has been insufficient to stay on top of the ever-growing deferred maintenance. Okay, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Shragi. Well, the very final slide reminded me that we've seen that one before, and I guess my question is perhaps to you, Chair Shragi. In the governor's capital budget as proposed, are any of these projects in there? And I know that we've seen this planetarium because I remember somebody panicking until it was pointed out that it's just a receipt authority because completely privately funded. And is it in the supplemental budget somewhere so that the university can receive that gift?
Director Hutchinson, can you give us an update?
Yeah, I believe as an awareness and receipt authority, it is. But I otherwise, we're not asking for state funds.
I'm asking if Chair Shragi. Yes, I understand it's receipt authority. I am asking, is it in the current version of the supplemental budget or the capital budget?
Rev. Hannah, I'll get back to you and make sure I get you that information. I do not know at the top of my head.
Thank you, and I'm got some lifelines conferring in the back, but if they have an answer, they can let us know in a moment.
And then
Representative Hannon.
Chair Shragi, in the proposed capital budget from the governor, are any of the other FY27 priorities listed?
Director Hutchinson, I don't believe they.
No.
What I thought. I did not believe so, and I'm getting confirmation that it is not. Okay, very good. Are there additional questions from committee members? Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Shragi. Just more of a comment. This is so embarrassing. Not only are we failing our schools all over Alaska, but we're failing the colleges where we want our own homegrown people to be staying in Alaska. And frankly, this is embarrassing, and we need to be serious about bringing in more revenue.
Yep. Well, thank you very much for those comments, Representative Jimmy. Director Hutchinson, do you want to have any response to that? Do you want to talk about the impact of the university on being able to retain our youngest and brightest?
Chair Shragi, Representative Jimmy, I think you're many agree that has been a real challenge in the fact that deferred maintenance, there's been challenges in funding, and that does affect our ability. We want to present our very best case to the students and the young people that are trying to make something of themselves and get a post-secondary education. And a lot of it starts with the capital structures that either they're residing in or the buildings that they're working in to work in the labs. And so to the extent we can make our best case, I think that's better for the state. Statistics show that the students, once if they're attending the University of Alaska, they're more likely to stay here and contribute to the workforce. And so that is all connected, and anything that the legislature can do on that front is always appreciated.
Wonderful. We are just a few minutes ahead of schedule, so I want to thank you, Director Hutchinson, and everyone you've had on, all your facility directors, for their brevity in moving us through the slides expeditiously. Since we do have just a couple minutes, I did want to ask, does the University of Alaska system have a unique role in Alaska? The reason I ask is there was a question earlier about whether or not the university's fees are sufficient to cover all costs. And I think it's a very valid question. But my understanding is most states have a state-supported university in addition to private universities. Can you maybe expound on that a little bit and provide us some perspective?
Chair Shragi, you're exactly right. There's a combination of state funds for state universities and tuition dollars, tuition and fees. And we do our very best to make sure that we have skin in the game. You know, we have $111 million was our FY25 actuals when it comes to tuition and fees. You know, you counterbalance that with about $365 million for UGF for actuals for FY25. So we're attempting to do it, but it's a balance because you can only raise tuition and fees so much. And by the way, the university just raised it 4% in November, and that was agreed by the Board of Regents. It was permitted by the student regent. And so there's some sensitivities there that if you raise them too much, then enrollment's going to decline because we've determined that we've seen this, we've done studies on this, that there's some price sensitivities with these with the students. So if you raise it too high, then your enrollment's going to drop, and then we're asking for the state for more dollars because we're not getting the same amount of tuition. So we're always grateful for everything that that it can be provided by the legislature when it comes to the state. And one of the things that President Pitney has always talked about is we have to have skin in the game, and we, to the very highest extent that we can, we always attempt to do that. So to the extent we can float ourselves, we can make sure that we're at least coming to the legislature with reasonable requests, and they can make a determination whether those can go forward or not.
Representative Galvin?
Well, thank you. I just wanted to make a quick comment. When we talk about skin in the game, to me, we're partners. We should, your skin in the game is delivering workers for our economy, and I appreciate the previous presentations that you've given with regard to that. You've done a lot for many different areas of the workforce. I appreciate that. I appreciate how you're partnering also with private industry to help make ends meet and ensure that you have enough investment and partnerships to bring us into innovative thinking and newer ways of looking at problems that we have, and even bringing in newer economies, I will add. I think that there's a lot of things going on right now that are exciting. We are the only Arctic university, as we've heard so many times. And so I do want to, you know, back to your thought of Chair Shragi about how most states do have a state university and sometimes private ones. We're a little unique up here. This is our big one. This is it. And I think that it's on us to make sure that we're bringing you up to speed. I saw a chart last night that I didn't bring out, but what I was looking at was how are we doing in every department in terms of keeping up with inflation. And for the university, you were second to last in terms of how much we've been investing. So I do want to bring that up. We have a ways to go. Like I say before, we are a robust partner at the table with you. But I see that there's been a lot of interest around the university. And I think as time comes, we're going to see a shift. We are going to become that state that is the culture of education and the future. So it's exciting. I also wanted to share my gratitude for all of those who just presented. What we got to see is what it should look like with regards to giving us a full description of different tiered projects in a way that makes it simple for the public to understand what the investments would be going toward. I appreciated that, and thanks to all of those who were making the hard decisions about how to, I guess the best way to say, scaffold that decision-making around making our buildings whole and also reducing the footprint. I heard that from the president that there's been some reduction there. We do have a lot of square footage, so to speak, and that's great. We're a giant stake, but also to make sure that it's meeting our needs for the universities is great. So, again, mostly just gratitude, but also it's on us to be a partner. Thank you.
Yeah, I know I've had some criticisms in the past and some of the presentations you've seen. I appreciate the presentation today and really appreciate each of the facility directors. I know they do a lot of hard work to try and keep these buildings up and running and the heat on and the roofs and floors dry, and oftentimes having to get quite creative in that work given the ever-growing level of deferred maintenance and lack of adequate support. Representative Hannon, final comments slash question to you?
Yeah, I'm just... because it was a dense presentation, and I'm returning to just making sure before we start delving into our capital budget in the next few weeks. On the match page, so I'm on slide 7, UAF campus transit fleet maintenance facility, $1.4 million match, $5.4 million federal. Is that state match that you're needing on that project, or is that private match? Because the other two were presented on just receipt authority needed.
Representative Hannon, I'll defer to UAF Director Wolford on that question.
Director Wolford?
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, Cameron Wolford, UAF Design and Construction. That's in our capital request for state funding on the match. We have see this as a really good leverage of funds. We also have two additional DOT fast planning awards that are connected to this with the natural gas bus fleet changeover here in Fairbanks. And UAF has been awarded two grants, one to build a natural gas filling station that supports both our buses and the borough buses, and receive funding to purchase three natural gas buses to replace three buses in our fleet. And so this maintenance facility would tie into those other two items that we've also received through the fast planning funding.
Follow up, Representative Hannon.
So I'm just trying to get some totals of placeholders. So the other additional, great that you got those other grants. Do they require any either receipt authority from us or match money from us?
Director Holford?
Those who, through the chair, Representative Hampton, those two do not require any match or receipt authority. The only match or receipt authority are the $1.4 million match and the $5.4 million in federal receipt authority for the grant.
Okay.
Director Hutchinson, I see you.
Yeah, Representative Hannon, thanks to my trusted team. The receipt authority for the planetarium is in the supplemental budget for $8 million. Okay. So there you go.
And then I got one more follow-up, because again, I'm trying to follow the request, and we jumped from receipt authority, then a bond package, then we went into deferred maintenance and prioritized. And when I go to page 15, that first swath of prioritized deferred maintenance projects, it's just under $12 million. Bottom right corner.
Yes, Representative Hannon, through the chair. Just for example purposes, I just wanted to show what it looks like in the red book on page.
I'm looking for totals. And then if we went
Representative
back.
Representative Hannon.
So the projects on page 7 that are under bond, those are all brand new projects. So that's in the tune of $100 million.
Director Hutchinson?
Representative Hannon, correct. Yeah, we've distinguished deferred maintenance versus some of the other capital requests.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Director Hutchinson, thank you very much again to you and your team, to President Pitney. Really appreciate your guys' availability today and walking us through the needs at the University of Alaska system. With that, we're going to take a brief at ease as we transition over to Co-Chair Foster for HB 91 under bills previously heard. We're at ease at 2:48 p.m.
My bid.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I'm going to call this meeting the House Finance Committee to order. The time is 2:54 p.m. Mr. Anderson, if you wouldn't mind grabbing me another copy of the script, I may have thrown mine away, so I'm doing this off the cuff here, which I think we should be able to manage, but I know that we left off with HB 91, and that is the marijuana tax bill. And we also left off with completing amendment number 6. And so next up would be amendment 7, 8, and 2, which was ruled to the bottom. And so with that, I think I've got everything covered, but I'm seeing a desire to go at ease here. So we will do a brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record at 2:55 p.m. And so we're on Amendment Number 6, and Representative Josephson?
Withdrawn.
Okay, Amendment Number 6 has been withdrawn, so that takes us to Amendment Number 7. Representative Galvin?
I move Number 7, Amendment Number 7.
That.
Thank you. Yeah. So what this amendment does is essentially puts more parameters back to the original days of the MET portion of the revenue. And we already heard from the maker of this bill that there 50% goes to reduction, 25% to the MET, and 25% to UGF. And so what I'm referring to with this amendment is specifically the MET funds. We're changing the designation from the language of youth services program to after school grant program to better specify who may receive the MET funds. It also includes conforming language to define the after school grant program. You might ask, why would you do that? It seems like it's one and the same. But it turns out that language is pretty specific because it addresses a type of need that is Alaska-wide. And so what we know of that is important, I think, for all of us around the table to understand is the data that is Alaska data from the Alaska Children's Trust shows. And again, this is also, I think, a segment of the Alaska Children's Trust called the Alaska After School Network. And so what we know is that participation in organized after school activities at least 2 days a week reduces the likelihood of youth marijuana use by 39%. And every dollar invested in after school programs saves at least $3 by increasing kids' earning potential, improving performance at school, and reducing crime and juvenile delinquencies. So those are some of the pieces of the ROI. What it looks like is there are activities that are culturally appropriate and age appropriate statewide. So everything from United Way of Mat-Su, where youth are providing Youth 360, provides middle school and high school after-school programs at Houston Middle School, Houston High, Northgate Church, and in Wasilla. And then there's also programs in Kenai. Rural CAP has programs in Matasca Lake, Kwikluk, Teller, Kasiglik, Pilot Station, Aniak, et cetera. AmeriCorps members are recruited locally from those communities by sponsoring community program partner like tribal or city councils, local schools, or health clinics. And successful applicants then are supervised by a locally identified site supervisor and expected to work closely with the community residents and engaging in these after-school programs, whether they are academic or character development, sometimes physical activities, basketball, any sort of healthy lifestyles activity, and creative, cultural, and STEM education. Those are give you a picture of what we're talking about. Those are after school programs that we're talking about. And there, I think there was some sense of those who, again, back in 2014-15 in House Bill, coincidentally 191, they articulated that it be after school programs. And so, mind you, I support all youth programs. I always will, but I want to get, help us return back to the original intent, that was in the intent language at the time. And ask us to please move this language into this amendment.
Question. Okay. In the queue, I've got Representative Stapp, Hannon, Josephson. I would like to go first to the sponsor and just get your thoughts on the amendments. Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. For the record, Ashley Carrick representing West Fairbanks. And as to Amendment Number 7, I am neutral. I will say I've heard from the After School Network advocates, and we also heard from them in this committee during public testimony about the desire to specify the MET language. And generally, I'm fine with that request. Again, my focus in putting this bill forward is to focus on the tax rate and the industry need, and as to where this committee will fall in terms of support for further designation or support for clarity around designation, I defer to the will of the committee. So I thank the sponsor of the amendment for bringing it forward.
Okay, thank you, Representative Stapp.
I got, I think, two questions for the sponsor of the amendment, Co-Chair, through the chair to Representative Galvin. The waterfall of the money, basically 50% of it, or it says it may at least use 50%. You're changing the word youth services to after school grant program. And what happens in your amendment to all the things in the money that currently go to, like anti-tobacco enforcement, community-based tobacco prevention, tobacco through the chair.
Thank you, Representative Stapp. I believe that is in a different segment. I don't think that's under youth services, although it may be. And to answer your question, I'm not positive. But I do know that this positive youth development after school program is served currently, and they would like to bring it back to the original intent. And it could be that some of it is overlapping even. I'm not positive if some of those activities are after school. But I'm just trying to help us to focus on that time period, especially when we know so many of our youth are on their own. And these programs, especially in rural Alaska, are loved. And it's also a great way to get local young people into AmeriCorps. That program is fantastic. It gets those guys acting as leaders. Right when they graduate at age 18, you become eligible, depending on what your background is and such. So, this was brought to me, frankly, by Alaska Children's Trust. And so I imagine they're aware of all the other opportunities where these youth services go. I did hear that there was some struggles, I should say, as to how those funds were, or challenges to ensure that the funds were going to after-school programs. And so at one time, I don't know if that's still there, but they certainly wanted us to, if we could, better articulate intent with the language here.
Fault, Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, I think Co-Chair Foster is the chair to Rep. Galvin. Yeah, just to be clear, I don't have a problem with what you're adding, after-school grant program. That seems fine to me. I'm just curious if it's coming from the same pot of money and you're, let's say, hypothetically taking away funds that would be going to anti-tobacco marketing.
So if I could...
Representative Galvin?
Thank you. Just to make sure we understand, I think, what your question was, the Met fund, 50% is to go to the after-school programs. And then there is another 50% of the Met program. And, you know, again, I'm not clear as to where your tobacco cessation falls in that. And certainly tobacco cessation is important as well. I'm not saying it's not.
Yeah. I was going somewhere.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I apologize.
No, I'm just saying it's all the same statute that you're amending, right? So I'm just trying to make sure I understand where the money is going. So I think what you are saying, and maybe the sponsor can weigh in and see if this is correct, that if this bill passes, 50% of the money is going to be directed toward this purpose, which is an after-school program for kids. That's how I read the amendment. I just want to look to the sponsor through the chair.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you, through the co-chair, to Representative Stapp. So if this amendment passes, not the underlying legislation just yet, but if the amendment passes, 50% of the current Met funds, which are already designated towards youth service grant programs, would be designated towards after-school programs. It's not 50% of the revenue. It's 50% of the Met fund. And then the other 50% of the Met fund is already, as Representative Galvin mentioned, further designated. And I believe, as someone who used to be a salaried employee from a grant that was provided through Met funds, I believe that's completely separate part of the Met from the current amendment, which is just focused on that youth services grant.
In fault then. Yeah, thanks for clarifying. So we'll dig down back on the difference between youth services and after school and changing that language. What are youth services currently? Because I know what the amendment is changing it to, but what are currently the youth services that we're taking the money away from through the chair?
Representative Galvin?
I cannot give you an accurate answer. We would need to hear from the Department of Health, who apparently has done it lots of different ways. And that was that's why I believe the Children's Trust brought it to me, is they wanted to see more certainty around the after-school portion. That's all I have to offer, and I'm sorry it's not more detailed.
Yeah, that's okay. And just to clarify, I don't have a problem with the amendment. I just want to make sure I understand it. That's all.
Sure.
Representative Carrick? No? Mr. Relay? No? Okay.
No. Thank you.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I don't believe, and it would require additional follow-up, which is another reason why I'm neutral on this amendment at this time, but I don't believe we're actually taking away from any current service to provide additional for any new service. My understanding is, from talking to the advocates, is that we're just better clarifying where the money's currently going so that it continues to go there, primarily in this case for after-school programming. And I will stand corrected at some point in a future hearing if I was wrong about that. But that's my understanding about what this amendment's trying to do.
Okay, Representative Stapp, is that the conclusion of your...
I have one more on the Section 14.
Representative Stapp?
Excuse me. I do not. I'm just very tired. That's all I had.
Okay. Very quickly, I just want to, taking things out of order here and for the record, to note who is here. I didn't do the attendance earlier, and that's Representative Stapp. I see Representative Bynum, Representative Moore are online. We have also Representative Schrage, Representative Josephson, Representative Jimmy, Representative Galvin, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Hannon, and myself, Co-Chair Foster here. And with that, the next question goes to Representative Hannon and then Josephson. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. And I guess my questions are similar to Representative Stapp. And I, too, you know, the after-school programs, and I've heard no dissent from them as program recipients that they're not getting their grants. The decline in revenue has led to reduction in funds, but not that it's going to programs as unintended. And I guess I'm very cautious about changing the legal term that has been used of youth services to after school without understanding what it might be excluding. let me just walk it out. So, for instance, does that mean a weekend program for the cultural education activity isn't, because that's not after school, that's a weekend program, or a summer program can't? And I am not suggesting those are currently being done, but I did not hear from any of the after-school program advocates that the grants they think should be going to their kind of programming aren't going to their kind of programming. Their concerns articulated to me were, we've seen a decline in revenue, and that's their only concern over when we're dealing with the tax collection. If there's a decline in revenue, therefore their grants will go down. But I am cautious if Youth Services has incorporated all kinds of programs that are largely after school. I don't want to create a definition that excludes the summer program, the weekend program, or other programs that we're not able to hear are existing there, and exclude them by changing the definition to after school versus youth services.
Okay. Representative Galvin, any reply to that?
I'm going to do my best to reply. I think that the reason the Alaska Children's Trust brought this forward is that youth services can mean all sorts of things. It could mean even things that one maybe wouldn't expect. Like, let me see if I can come up with something. A music program during the day that maybe isn't something that's an amendment to something that's happening during the school day. I think that I think that after school program is a programming is sort of a well thought of kind of umbrella of activities and time period. You know, I'll be honest, I'm just sort of trusting Alaska Children's Trust to have a very well-rounded assessment of all the different things offered to children. And that made sense to me that they were concerned about the many ways that does get, like, to your point, you're trying to keep it general, and they're worried that it gets too general, and then it goes in lots of different directions, as I understand it. And so I was simply trying to help them bring the language to be more specific around that age group and hopefully around the activities that, like they have said, is making a clear difference with regard to reducing the likelihood of youth marijuana, making a clear difference in terms of performance at school and even attendance at school, and crime and juvenile delinquency. This group seems to have a handle on the studies of what's happening in Alaska. They've got a lot of they use, I think, the youth behavioral YRBS data, okay, you're very well familiar with that. Okay, so they use that sort of data to help track all of the different programming that happens. I'll leave it at that.
Any follow-up, Representative Hannon?
Yeah, I appreciate Representative Galvin for sharing the talking points with me, but it actually convinces me that I'm going to need to vote against the amendment because the after-school programs are looking to exclude behavioral health programs that might get grants. Now, I hope that we are focusing at preventative programs like after-school. But again, if we are already using some of that money for behavioral health programs for kids, to cut them off without knowing that, without having an investigation of this one, that the Presbyterian Housing Program in Fairbanks gets a grant to run a program there for the kids in treatment, and we are cutting them off without knowing that, I am hesitant. And I haven't heard of widespread abuse of this money, not going to kid focused ones, but to change that definition to be strictly after school without knowing what it excludes, I can't support, because there could be somebody that gets $1,000 and it's the only way that they get that program funded. So, and I wish, because the after school advocates, all I met with them, and I'm a big fan of the Alaska Children's Trust, and I do think that much of this is after school programming that we want to keep kids occupied. But you know, anytime someone is advocating for, I need my turf to be absolutely defined in a way that protects me, my concern is why? Who did you think was taken from your lane? And I just don't want to make that with it. I believe your intention is good, but I don't know what the ripple effect is for other programs.
Representative Galvin, I'm wondering if maybe in your wrap up, you can come back to this.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
May I get in the queue?
Sure. I've got Representative Josephson, Tomaszewski, and Bynum. Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I understand it, what's at issue is 50% of 25%. So it's how we spend 12.5%, which is a lot. And it's apparently in the range of $3 million that's at issue. This is what I'm told. It's interesting to me that the amendment keeps the words youth services grant at line two, page two, line 24, although it gets rid of it at page five, line 14. So it survives as a term of art at page two, line 24. And I don't know, I mean, it's described there still. And then what we're doing is reworking by deleting lines 28 to 30. The key words that are added are after school grant. So there's something magical about after school grant, apparently. And I met with the same folks, after school program people, campfire, et cetera. I said, do you have an ask? They said, no, which I sort of liked, because I'm operating budget chair. But then they mentioned this MET redesignation. And I just, for the life of me, can't tell, as Representative Hannon and Representative Stapp noted, who's going to miss out on the $3 million. That's the part I'm concerned about. I don't have a question.
Okay. Next up, Representative Tomaszewski.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So these after-school programs, do they encompass all schools? Do they encompass private, public, religious, homeschool?
Representative Galvin.
Thank you for that question, Representative Tomaszewski. I can't tell for certain, but I can tell you that Northgate Church in Wasilla, it seems to be one of the, they are serving 2,200 youth in 35 different programs. And so for this organization, it seems as though it's open to, so they're grantees, and I think that they would be applying. I don't know how many are homeschools. I don't know how many are church organizations, and I don't know how many are run specifically and only through a public school. It looks like there are several that are in schools themselves, and there's actually a big, long list of schools, which I don't think you would want me to read out. The project grad in Kenai Peninsula looks like it might be a homeschool. I don't know. Razdolna School and Vozhnesenka School, I haven't heard of. They might be home. No, they're public schools. Okay. There's something at a clubhouse. Yeah. I just don't know for sure.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yeah. So I'm kind of against the whole designated funds out of any fund. I think it just really makes it difficult to do any changes to legislation that are designated funding sources for particular programs. If they are great programs and they are highly sought after and highly needed, I think they should be able to stand on their own and be able to get into the budget but to designate funds from any particular tax or anything, I think is just, it makes it difficult to make any changes because then all of a sudden you have to take in consideration all the different funding of all the different programs that are tied to this funding. And I think it's makes it more difficult and complicated than it really should be. So thank you.
Okay. Next up, we have Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I was just going to comment on this. I actually appreciate the maker of the amendment bringing this item forward. I see both sides of the argument that's at hand, and I think that the term youth services is a pretty broad term. But I do see the desire to want to include after school. So a question to the maker of the amendment, was there any thought in instead of just deleting the words youth services to say youth services and after school or youth services or after school in the language?
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I think I'm going to go back to my understanding was that when the bill was first created, the extent of the MET fund was for 50% to go to after-school programs and the other 50% to prevention items. So in the first year, the Department of Health, as I understand it, did just that. And then because of the needs for other needs, let's say in health, think there was a broader language that was used, and I want to help us appreciate that what we're trying to do is go back to the original intent. I would entertain, if that's what you wanted to do, would be to make an alteration in the language that included both, but I wanted to make sure that you understood where and how the language sat originally. After school programs can apply like any program. It apparently is not 100% open. The current funding targets middle schoolers so that they can reach them earlier. And there is not enough funding in there to reach absolutely everyone in every age group. But no other program loses funds. What it will do is ensure current support is not redirected like has happened in the past to other programs. So I that's the reason to keep it specific, is that it has been redirected to other programs.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I'm mentioning it because in statute, there is a definition within statute when we talk about youth services, and that services being provided primarily to individuals under 18 years of age for recreational, educational, or development purposes. So I do appreciate the after-school component. So, Co-Chair Foster, I would move a conceptual amendment to amend the language to say, instead of inserting after school, it would say youth services or after school.
Can you repeat that one more time, Representative Bynum?
Okay. I would offer a conceptual amendment to modify line 6 to insert, instead of after school, it would say youth services or after school.
Okay. Any objection?
No objection.
Okay.
I don't object to that.
Okay. Hearing no objection, the conceptual amendments to amendment number 7 has been adopted. So that brings us back to the main motion, main amendment. Representative Schrocki.
Co-Chair Foster, thank you. Yeah, I didn't object to the conceptual amendment because I guess I appreciate what the sponsor is trying to do with this amendment. I don't know if I'm too tired or what, but I'm not able to wrap my mind around what exactly what we're doing is and what the implications are. I'm a big believer in incremental progress, and I think this bill is incremental progress. And I'm not at a place where I understand this well enough to be comfortable with it. And I think I'm going to be opposed to the amendment really in any form. I mean, we could maybe take more time to understand this better, but I suspect that the bill sponsor would probably prefer to keep this moving. And I'm just not able to wrap my mind around this with the state of things as they are right now, for what it's worth.
Okay. If there's no other comments or questions, wrap up, Representative Galvin.
You bet. I'm going to make this so short, like within 30 seconds, hopefully you'll understand that a lot of people voted for marijuana tax because they were okay with it, thinking that some of the funds were going to go toward helping our kids, specifically kids who might be in the mindset of thinking about choosing marijuana as an activity. And so at that time, there was some language that included after school, and that's been watered down a bit. But I appreciate Representative Bynum making it clear that it's youth services for after school. That seems to spell it out to me. I think that does the trick. And so I hope that you will support that we get half. Again, we're talking about 25% of the overall funds. Half of it goes to the Met, and half of the Met program dollars go into after-school youth services. That's it.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. I'm not sure who objected. Is there an objection?
Objection.
Okay, Representative Staff has an objection. Would you like to speak to your objection?
Oh, shoot. 15 seconds over.
Okay, and so with that, before us is Amendment Number 7, as amended with Conceptual Amendment Number 1, and we have an objection. So, Madam Clerk, if you could please call the roll.
Representative Tomaszewski. Representative Bynum.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Jimmy.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Moore.
No.
Representative Shragi.
No.
Representative Josephson.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
2 yea, 8 nay.
So on a vote of 2 yea to 8 nay, Amendment 7 as amended is not adopted. That next takes us to Amendment Number 8, Representative Josephson.
I will not be offering at any time amendment in this lifetime, Amendment 8.
Okay.
Yay.
Amendment 8 will not be offered. And that takes us back to Amendment Number 2, which is rolled down to the bottom. Representative Josephson.
I move Amendment 2 briefly.
Check.
Representative Josephson.
I'm not going to advance this, but I am a little troubled by the language at page 5, lines 13 to 16, for some of the same reasons that have just been discussed. It says that the department can use, it may use, so it may not use. All right, that's a lot of discretion. Up to 50% of 25%. On youth services grant programs, community-based marijuana misuse prevention components of that program. I mean, I guess I'm not going to pursue this because it seems like they can do that now under existing law. I just don't think that it sort of comes back to the same issue that Rep. Hannon and staff were talking about. I don't know if this cuts out folks who are doing great work now. I just can't determine it, but I'll withdraw it.
Okay. Amendment Number 2 has been withdrawn. Are there any further amendments? Seeing none, the desire of the committee to advance the bill? I would entertain a motion, Representative Shragi.
Make sure I have the right one here. Yes. Co-Chair Foster, I move House Bill 91, Work Order 34-LS0528/N, out of committee, as amended, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay, do we have any objections?
Object.
We have an objection. Would you like to speak to your objection, Representative Tomaszewski?
Yeah, I'm not supportive of this bill in its current form.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, Madam Clerk, the motion is to move House Bill 91, Version N. We have an objection. If you could please call the roll.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Shragi.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
6 yay, 2 nay.
And so on a vote of, we missed the folks online.
Can't vote to move it out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, thank you very much. That's a good point. We're all getting a little long in the day, long in the night, yesterday and long in the day. Okay, so with that, on a vote of 6 yay to 2 nay, House Bill 91, which is version 34-LS0528/N, is moved out of committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Please stick around to sign the committee report. Also, it is not 4 o'clock yet. We don't have finance tomorrow. And then we don't have the next week's schedule out, which would tell us what we have on Monday. I don't believe there is a 9 a.m. meeting on, no, we don't have finance on Monday either. So we'll be coming back on Tuesday, and I don't think we come back until 1:30 on Tuesday. So,
hey,
yay. Is there anything else to come for the committee? Seeing none, Representative Hannon.
May you all find Easter bunnies with chocolate ears somewhere in the next few days.
Well, I like this. Sounds like maybe a riddle, but maybe not.
I'll settle for a pillow.
Okay. Representative Carrick, any parting words?
Thank you. Thank you to the committee. This bill has been a very, very large effort. I know today it's been a very extraordinary effort considering how exhausted everyone is. I concur with Rep. Hannon's comments.
Great. Thank you so very much. And with that, House Finance will be adjourned at 3:31 p.m.